Welcome to Extra Blue. I'm your host, Elena Sonneson. I just wrapped up period one of racing on the World Cup in Europe. Last weekend, we raced in Davos, Switzerland, in a skate sprint and a 20K individual start skate race. During both of these races, I had my first top 30 results, and I am super proud of these for many reasons. One being the patience that I had to achieve these results. It took me almost 4 years of racing on the World Cup to get to this point. And so I'm just really proud of the way I stuck with it and kept believing that it could happen. I also chased after Jesse's downhill segment in the last 1.8K of the 20K race, and I got her by 0.4 seconds, which you'll hear about in this podcast. So I'm just really proud of the way I kind of ended that race for the last one of the period. And also, I did all of this at altitude, which has always been really hard for me, something I've always struggled with. And so I'm just proud that I've kind of been able to overcome that physiological challenge for myself. And these two races also qualified me for the Tour de Ski. So I am super excited to continue my World Cup circuit this season and race in the Tour starting next week, just around New Year's. In the meantime, I will be spending Christmas in Davos with most of the national team and my boyfriend, and I'm excited to have a little break from the racing, get out for some nice sunny skis, and just enjoy the mountains and take a little break. This episode of Extra Blue is sponsored by Salomon. The best way to create a better tomorrow is to be enthusiastic about what's coming next and prepare for what's yet to be done. Salomon has committed to a responsible tomorrow by refocusing the entire company and its operations to create responsible products with a smaller footprint on the environment. Salomon's goal is to drive change within our community by creating more inclusive outdoor experiences. At the same time, they are committed to conducting their business responsibly while delivering high-performing products with the most innovative designs. Together, we must unleash the best version of ourselves and collectively become agents of change. You can check out Salomon's full line of skis, boots, clothing, and accessories at salomon.com or find them in shop at Gear West. It's been really nice to be here in Davos, and I am not taking those sunny days for granted. So today I sat down with Jesse Diggins, and we were just too excited to see the sunshine and the blue sky. And so we recorded this outside on the patio of my apartment. I apologize for the sound quality. It was just too nice to not sit outside and record. So please bear with me with the sound quality, but there is some really great content in this podcast, and I hope you enjoy. Okay, well, Jesse, welcome to Extra Blue Podcast.
Thank you. I'm very honored to be here.
I'm so excited to have you as we sit on this patio in Davos, Switzerland, in this beautiful sunshine. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling pretty psyched that Davos is finally delivering the thing that we've been promising everyone. Like, oh, it's going to be sunny every day. You're just going to like sit out here drinking coffee in between workouts, and then it just hasn't been,
yeah,
except for race days. So yeah. Finally, I'm like, this is perfect. Like, this is how we sell it.
It is treating us. Yes, this is my first time to Davos this week. And last week, I feel like, you know, we were racing, and I feel like I didn't really get to appreciate it because you're kind of like in race mode, and yeah, you don't get to like sit outside and suntan all day. But now we can.
Yeah, exactly. Now we can. Actually, wait, can I ask you a question?
Okay.
What do you think about Davos thus far? It's like, it's your first time. Like, what's your general impression? And like the race course separate from the town,
because
those are different things.
Yeah, they are. Okay. So race course, I would say, was kind of what I was expecting, just based off of what people had said going into it, how it's like pretty much just a grind the whole time.
Yeah.
And especially because you're at altitude, you feel it, and there's really not much recovery. So that was kind of what I was expecting, but I think it was also a little more fun than I was like, wow, that sounds awful.
we don't sell it that way.
But it was more fun than I was anticipating. Davos is a town, I think I'm still warming up to it. I am used to, you know, Seefeld or Toblach, where I think they have more of like that
downtown area, and like they've got like a little like market thing going on, and yeah. I would say Davos, it's such a like long and skinny town that there's a lot going on, but I feel almost like overwhelmed, or I don't quite feel like homey here, but I'm still adjusting. It's still week one.
I mean, I agree. It's like a really good place if you want to buy a nice watch or a fur coat.
Yes.
But if you want to like, I don't know, buy a little trinket for somebody, it's like I feel out of my league a little bit.
Oh, yes.
But before we move on, can we talk about how you smoked me on the downhill?
Oh, my God.
I feel like this has to make it into the podcast.
That's not fair. You're asking all of the questions. I'm supposed to do that.
This is my last question. But for the listeners, we get, after every race, there's like a PDF breakdown of all the split stations. So it's not just the end results of the race, but it's like, here's how fast you skied from the start to 2.2, and then from 2.2 to 3. whatever it is, yeah. And then from there to the finish of the lap. And then, so you can kind of break it down and be like, oh God, like maybe I paced too conservatively, or here's where I lost time or gained time. And at the end, Sunday night, I get the PDF and I open it and I'm like scrolling through. I'm like, oh, this is cool. And then I see like, because I was really proud of how I skied that last downhill. And then I see a little number 2 next to the segment. And I was like, what the fuck? I don't know if I'm swearing podcast, but
I think we're okay.
And I was just like, wait, who got me? And I'm looking and I was like, oh my God, it was Elena. And then I was like, this is awesome. Like, I am so proud. Because that was, I always feel like, I don't know. I think there's like a cool point of pride of like smoking the downhill and not just being like, I only focus on grinding uphill and I forget about the rest of the course. I think people tend to forget about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I feel like that is, that just made my season, I think.
It made mine too. I was like, yes,
like, I'm ready to retire. I got that one trophy and I'm good to go. But yeah, I am so, I mean, okay, full disclosure, you were solo grinding out there, and I had a train of like 3 or 4 other girls to help draft, and like we were really working that last bit of the race, but
that can sometimes be a hindrance if they get weird on the downhill.
They were a little weird on the downhill, and I was like, ladies,
let me through.
I have followed,
I won't snowplow, I promise.
I have followed Jesse and Sophie Caldwell enough that let me please downhill this.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like I have to owe that all to you and to Sophie, because I've just like watched you guys, followed you both, and learned how to handle those S turns and how to skate those, you know, tuck skate those downhills and like really work the finish. So I am just grateful that I've been able to follow you around so much. But
I would actually respectfully disagree though, because I think you skied that downhill. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it always kind of bothers me when someone's like, oh, congrats, you probably did this because of this teammate of yours. Yeah. And I'm like, at the end of the day, you had to ski that course. You didn't know what the splits were. You didn't know. You hadn't even raced it before. I've been racing it for 10 years.
Yeah.
And like, you skied that course. So while I'm honored and flattered to have been a little part of the training leading up to it, like, I don't think it's fair to assign credit to anyone but you for that. Like, that always kind of annoys me when someone's like, oh, I bet you won because of this or that. I'm like, but maybe they just skied a great race.
Yeah. I mean, I am proud of it. I'll take it as a win. And it was, good. You know, my best distance result on the World Cup. And so I was pretty excited about it. If you do look at the splits, it does look like I was maybe a little conservative and then just like went for the last 2K throughout the whole race. But, you know, I learned my lesson at altitude and it could have gone the other way where I just blow up. But
the other direction loses you so much more time.
Right. Exactly. But, yeah.
Yeah. Because I've done it that way.
I have too.
And I'm like, I feel like your strategy was the best way to create a good race versus like, I'm going to hammer and then hold on. It's like, you have no idea how much time you can bleed when you blow up at altitude.
Especially because it was a 20K. And I feel like we're still kind of learning how to race 20Ks. How do you feel about it?
You know, it's funny. I do really like them. I think they're a little more forgiving, right? Like a 10K and a sprint are super different. Because in a sprint, you have like zero mistakes, right? Especially one where it's really fast and powerful and stuff. It's like you make one little mess up and you might be out. Mm-hmm. And a 10K, it's like, okay, you can, you know, I've definitely had great races where I'm like, eh, but I really didn't ski that part super well. I can improve on it. I can do it better. And so I feel like there's a little bit of give. And in a 20K, there's even more. But at the same time, it can be easy to space out.
Because
it's like, I don't know, between 48 and 50-something minutes of racing. And so, like, it can also be easy to zone a little and bleed time unintentionally, not because you're like seizing up or totally fatigued, but just because it's a long time to be focused.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's actually really tough.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the 20K in Lillehammer a couple of weeks ago, it was a mass start, and I was feeling pretty good about my start. I was still with the pack, you know, lap 2 of 6, I was in the mix still. I mean, not like in the top mix, but I was like still with people, and I was pretty excited about that. And then I went to go get a feed and kind of like lost focus for just a, you know, a fraction of a second. And then everyone was gone. And I was like, oh man, now I have to, I mean, I didn't ski the whole thing alone, but I was kind of broken off from the main pack. And once you lose that, it's really hard to catch back up. So,
and it happens fast.
Yeah. I do feel it, you know, it's like you can kind of zone out for a second, but like you still got to be attentive during that 20K, because there's like still plenty going on. And yeah, it's been fun to kind of play around with them, though, I feel like.
And I feel like I actually, this is fun because this is the kind of podcast where I can talk about stuff that I don't ever tell the media. But I feel like I really use the downhills to like reset and refocus.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe not the downhill in Davos where like you can't zone out or you might blow off into the field.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I don't know what's a good example, like Ruka. You have a downhill where it's like a 30-second tuck in tracks.
Yeah.
And so you have a second to just exhale and just like refocus.
Yeah.
And
maybe go throw a snot rocket out.
Yeah, a couple
really
of those.
Take care of that. Yeah.
Right between the legs, first behind you. So but I think like it's kind of nice. Like I often use, like, if there's a straight shot downhill where it's not technical and you shouldn't be working it or you can't work it, I use that to just be like, come on, like refocus, like recommit to this section. And I feel like that's something that's been helpful in these longer races,
yeah,
is to like break it up into like defined chunks.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. How do you feel about like equidistance as a whole?
Oh man, I this is fine because you know how what I'm gonna say, but I really like it, and also not even because of the races themselves, because of the message that it sends.
Mm-hmm.
Like you think about it, like it's, even as a younger kid, like being like, wait, why do women do 30 when men do 50?
Right.
This is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I train exactly as much as the guys back in high school. I was like, I'm beating most of the guys.
Yeah.
Like, this is, why should my race be different? And in high school, we all race 5Ks.
Right.
You know, it's all equal all the time. We do the same training. We show up. We do everything equal. And then all of a sudden, you get to the highest level of sport. And in some cases, like the scathlon, you're doing half.
Right.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, this is, it honestly, it was insulting.
Yeah.
And for me, it's insulting once I heard the stories of some of the first women to race World Cups and why it is that way. Because you hear from, like, Allison Owen Spencer. I think actually her last name has changed after she was married, but that's what her name was at the time. And she won the first ever World Cup. It was, like, a 5K in Telemark. And she talked about how, forgive me if I get any details wrong, but they had an ambulance at the finish line because you know, your ovaries might fall out.
Right.
You might lose the ability to have children. And it's like the same crap that they pulled on the women ski jumpers.
Yeah.
They literally said, we think your uterus will fall out with the impact of landing, which is, what, are we in the 1600s?
Right.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, first of all, it's just so, like, not even close to how our bodies work. And secondly, it just seemed, like, so offensive and ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so, like, to me, the origins of why women probably, I can only assume that line of thought is why they had us ski so much shorter than the men. And that is not okay.
Right.
And I think it's silly when people go, oh, it's just tradition. Like, you should do it because it's tradition. Well, there's a lot of traditions that are not cool that we don't do anymore.
Yeah.
As a globe, like, we don't do things anymore because they're bad and they hurt people. So, like, I think just, like, And also, times never made any sense for us anyway.
Right. Yeah. So I know when someone asks, like, oh, like, how was your 10K time this weekend compared to, like, your PR? I'm like, oh, I have no idea. I don't know.
It's irrelevant.
Yeah. It's completely irrelevant. There's so many different variables with the snow and the course and the conditions, and you never know what that's going to be. But also, I feel like, to what you're saying, you know, I'm trying to think of any other endurance sport where they aren't doing equidistance, because running, you're all doing the same track events, or you're doing the half marathon or the marathon.
Or look at Courtney DeWalter. She beats most of the time, she beats most of the men.
Right.
If not all of them.
Yeah.
And the longer the distance, the more it comes together, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. men and women, because we are designed for long distance.
So basically what you're saying is when we start doing 50Ks, you're going to be all the guys.
Or maybe the guys should do 30. It'd be more interesting.
It would be, yeah.
Honestly, like, and the other thing that I've been thinking about a lot is when something is designated to one gender, mm-hmm. whether it's distance, whether it's how you should behave societally, how you should dress, how anything, mm-hmm. it hurts both genders.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like, boys, especially, like, you know, I don't know, 50 years ago, grew up like, you shouldn't cry, you shouldn't mm-hmm. show weakness, you should just be tough, you shouldn't have any problems whatsoever. So what happens when a young man starts struggling with an eating disorder?
Right.
He's more likely to die.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to feel like he can reach out for help. And the same thing with, like, distance. Like, men could be super good at 5Ks. It would be so fast, powerful, explosive, exciting. Different people might win the race.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think our guys would be really good at it. Yeah. So, like, it actually really hurts everyone when
right.
we don't give everyone a fair shot at something. And so I just, yeah, I think it's really silly to have these gender gaps where they don't need to exist. Where, like, it's just, it hurts both men and women.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, the way that we are adjusting to 20Ks and trying to figure that out, a lot of the men on the World Cup are trying to figure out a 10K
yeah.
because they're used to racing the 15K. And so when they're all of a sudden like, oh, we're only doing two laps, I need to go right now. And,
yeah.
and you know, I feel like some of our teammates have talked about how, like, either they've gone out way too hard because they're like, it's only two laps, I gotta go. Or maybe they don't go out hard enough because they're not used to having to really fire for a shorter amount of time. So it is interesting. You know, it's affecting both genders this season. And it'll be interesting to kind of see how both sides kind of, I guess, learn from the season and how we move forward with it. But I'm excited to see it happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a really positive move because mm-hmm. first and foremost, the message it sends.
Right.
I do feel bad for the guys where they were all of a sudden told you're racing a different distance.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we should have always been doing the same distance.
Right.
And I think there just needs to be a wide variety.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most important thing is I just want to see a wide variety.
Mm-hmm.
We should have everything from a prologue, 5K, 10K, 15, 20, all the way up to 50, because then different athletes have an opportunity to shine.
Right.
And I just think, like, yeah, I feel bad for him, but I really hope that, like, because of the message it sends, this is the right thing to do. Like,
right.
unequivocally. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how you would argue that it's not the right thing to have equal distance. And so, hot take, shots fired, come at me. But, like, I really hope this sticks.
Yeah.
I'm personally going to be incredibly disappointed if it doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, I just think it's proving that. And also, frankly, the times aren't that different.
Right.
It's not like it's a huge hurdle for TV producers.
Mm-hmm.
In Lillehammer, I beat quite a few of the guys.
Yeah.
Like, it just, it's not that different.
Right.
I might still need an ambulance in the finish because of how hard I race, but
right.
not because it's, like, physically dangerous
your,
for me
your
to race that long.
Your ovaries are not going to fall out because,
no, surely
because
not.
You're racing a 20K. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so I want to look a little more big picture. How do you feel about period one so far? Because we just wrapped up the end of period one in Davos, and we started back, what, a month ago in Ruka. So we've had 4 weekends of racing, and I feel like it's been basically its own tour because we're racing 2 to 3 times every single weekend, traveling to different countries, and it's a circus that I'm still learning. But how do you feel about the last month of racing?
I feel like the first race of the season was so long ago.
Yeah.
Like, that feels like, Ruka, I'm like, oh my God, that feels like months ago. But
yeah.
It was like 4 weeks ago.
Right.
Like, it's crazy. But I feel like it's gone really well. I feel like there's 2 categories to consider, like, how I personally feel like it's gone, like,
mm-hmm.
physically and then mentally. And then for the team.
Yeah.
Because that also affects me.
Right.
Because it's funny, who was I talking to? I was talking to my mom, and she was like, you're such an empath. Like, she's like, you really, like, you can't be, if you're in a room where someone's really stressed or really upset or whatever,
mm-hmm.
like, I can't just, like, walk away without having absorbed some of it.
Right.
Like, I'm an emotional sponge, which is sometimes good. And sometimes, like, wow, you need to learn how to walk away.
Yeah.
And it's like, sometimes it's not, you can't fix it.
Right.
So I think, like, I feel like I could be missing things, but overall, generally, it seems like the team is in a good place. And it seems like people have been pretty, like, happy or relaxed. Like, everyone has definitely had challenging races, but it seems like thus far, at least everyone's had at least one race where they're like, yes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm happy. I'm proud. Like, that came together. Everyone's been learning a lot. Of course, you always learn. But I think that's been really cool. So that makes me really happy. And then we've had just a lot of, like, silly TikTok dances. Like, I feel like I saw Hunter Wonders really come out of his shell and really just blossom.
No
and
kidding.
I feel like I got to know a lot of my teammates who aren't on our club team that, you know, I know you guys really, really well. But, like, I feel like it was just really fun getting to know more of the team and seeing people really start to, like, feel at home on the road.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, just kind of coming out of their shell.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So that makes me really happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then personally, the racing went almost exactly how I kind of thought it might go in terms of working into the season.
Okay.
Like, Ruka, like, or I guess I would say my base fitness was higher than I had expected, which was a lovely gift.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in Ruka, I was like, all right, I've had literally 5 days of skiing. I've skied, like, by the time we did the skate race in Ruka, that day literally doubled the amount of time on snow that I had at skating.
Yeah.
I had skated for like 2 hours total before that. And I was like, sweet. Like,
this is real.
Here we go. Like, luckily roller skiing translates super well. But yeah, I felt like with the technique and the way those hills are just so, it's all running.
Right.
It's not so much power striding. So I was kind of like, all right, I'm absolutely doing my best. I'm grinding it out. However, the results and the way my body felt and the way my technique was, I was like, this is exactly where I would expect to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not panicked. I'm not worried. I think some years ago I would have been like, oh my God, this isn't where I want to be.
Yeah.
But this, I feel like I'm not meeting expectations for me or anyone else. And I would have definitely, like, worried more.
Yeah.
And I think this was the first year where I didn't call my sports psych, like, being worried. I called her and was like, so we're on track.
Yeah.
And
okay.
She was like, nice.
Yeah.
And I think that is part of getting older, maybe, but, like,
right,
it basically went how I thought it might go. Like, in sprints, I felt like my top gear isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want it to be yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. But in distance, I was getting away, especially with these longer races, because the base fitness of being a 31-year-old had accumulated enough that I was like, okay, I don't need to be in my sharp race form, and I can still get away with some good races.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And I would say our ski service has been excellent.
Yeah.
That's huge.
I'd agree with that.
I feel like they're on a roll, and you can really feel when the truck is in a good place.
Yeah.
Like, they're vibing, they're jamming to their, like, weird radio stations, and, like, they're just, like, you walk in there, and you're like, yes.
Where
you
get
they're dialed, and that really makes me, like, psyched.
Yeah.
And it's cool that, like, our staff, at least, they're either, like, incredibly good at faking it, or it's real.
Yeah.
That they're having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm choosing to believe it's real.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They're cracking jokes, and so I feel like that would be hard to do if it were fake. And they have been really incredible. It's been so fun to kind of get to know them a little bit better, because I've always kind of popped into the World Cup and, you know, for a weekend or something, and then I leave, or maybe I stay for like 2 or 3 weeks, but then I leave. And I feel like this has kind of been the most consistent time that I've had with the World Cup crew, and it's been really fun to feel like part of it. You know, it's hard when you're here for a weekend and you're like, yeah, I'm here, I'm wearing the suit. And, you know, I know the team does everything they can to, like, make you feel welcome, but when you're really in it for, you know, a month or more, then you're like, okay, I'm part of this team, and that feels pretty good. So,
and how are you liking Solomon's?
Oh my gosh.
First year.
I am really, really enjoying them. I was quite nervous and anxious throughout the spring, summer, and fall, just because it's a huge change. And I had been on the same brand for almost a decade before, and I was really excited about the change, but it's just such a change, and it's so different.
And you're all in. It's not like, I mean, you are like,
yeah,
like, you really go.
You don't get to, like, go back to the other skis.
No.
But it's been really, really great. And it was nice this summer to go to Oberhof and ski in the tunnel in Germany and kind of get to know them. And then, you know, I had an extra 10 days before period one. I was in Norway training and kind of got to know the skis a little bit more. And then working with Oleg as my tech, he is just incredible. He keeps things so simple and just so, like, easy for me and for, I think, everyone involved. And he's been really great. And then, also, I am just loving to be able to kind of test skis with you as my little buddy.
Oh, my God. That's one of the things that I never got to do with anyone was mm-hmm. the ski sharing. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, so for the listeners, basically what we do is we each come to the snow on race day with our top six or mm-hmm. whatever it is. And then you test with Oleg and I test with Cork. And then we'll be, like, kicking out skis as we go. And sometimes it takes a little while, so we miss the window of opportunity. But usually we try to be, like, pretty efficient. And so we get it down to our top two. And then I'll take my second fastest pair, and you'll test them against yeah. your pair. And sometimes you want to go on them, sometimes you don't. But there's another option there,
right.
which is super cool. And yeah. we're also the same size, so it yeah. works for Skate and Classic, which is really nice. I feel like Skate, you have quite a bit of a range, right. so it doesn't really matter. But Classic, you need it to kick.
Right.
And you want to have confidence that, like, this will work
yeah.
for me. So I feel like, for me, that's just been, like, so freaking cool because I've always wanted to be able to, like, do that. So yeah. I got to do that with Sid a little bit last fall. Yeah. But then she was sick quite a bit. And okay. so I feel like we didn't really get to, it just didn't work out as well. But now we've got, like, a system yeah. dialed that is working. And it's, that's, I think, super cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm very grateful for the relationship and how we've been able to kind of navigate that this season so far. And it's been a really great change. And I feel like everyone at Salomon has been so supportive. And not only, like, the U.S. Salomon or, like, the World Cup Salomon team, but when I was... Before the season, I did an opening race in Beitostøl in Norway, and it was the Norwegian Salomon reps who waxed my skis and let me come in and, like, clean my skis after before I traveled, and I was not, like, benefiting them in any way, and they were so supportive and so kind and just so encouraging, and after, I mean, it hadn't been a great race for me, but they were still like, hey, that happens, like, you know, you'll get them next time, and so it's just cool to see that that support system really is as much of kind of a family as they try to, you know, give off the perception of that. It's true. It is. And
it actually is.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people are like, ah, but is it really like a ski family? Right. Like, they ask that about the national team yeah. here on the road, and they ask it about, like, Salomon. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
It actually is. Like, I've always felt like they care about me as a human first.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, if we come up with a new boot prototype and it doesn't work for your weirdly damaged feet, you do what you got to do, and we will help you, and we will keep working until mm-hmm. you're totally happy. And, like, you know, yeah, it's just they really have always valued me as a whole person first. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they do that with everyone. And, like, it's so cute, too. Like, even when they're knocking snow out of your boots right before the start,
mm-hmm.
they don't say, like, go win.
Right, right.
They say, have fun.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, they get me. Yeah. You know, like, this is actually what's important. And right. the fact that, yeah, they're just as happy to see me and give me a high five or a hug after a race, whether I win or lose, yeah. is, like, very telling.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you're enjoying
being
a fan.
Yeah. I do kind of want to circle back to something that you mentioned earlier about, you know, being in Ruka and maybe not having, you know, you have that base fitness, but you don't have that top speed. You're not mm-hmm. in peak form. So how do you mentally process that and prepare yourself leaning into it of, like, that's okay, it's going to come?
Yeah, that I like that question because I feel like that's something everyone struggles with, mm-hmm. right? Is, like, and especially because in our sport, it's not like, you know, if you're a swimmer, you're like, I'm swimming these times.
Yeah.
I'm on track.
Yeah.
Or, like, if you're a track athlete, you're like, all right, I know. Like, mm-hmm. these are my workouts. These are my times that I hit. And there's consistency there. Mm-hmm. And we don't have any of that mm-hmm. to go off of. Even roller skiing, the same, like, time trial course, like, it can vary wildly by, like, the temperature
yeah.
on the wheels. And if it's raining, mm-hmm. if the pavement's super cold, like, and so you really just don't know where you stand
right.
every year. And so I think this used to be something that I really stressed about. Mm-hmm. Like, every single fall, like, around Park City Camp, I would just be like, I don't know. I feel terrible. And of course I do. I'm living at 7,000 feet.
Right.
Like, I'm not an altitude baby. Like, this is hard for me. And so I would just really, like, struggle with mm-hmm. it. And honestly, I really leaned on my sports psychologist mm-hmm. and my family and then Wade.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just be like, oh, my gosh. And they were like, hey, listen, like, have you done everything you can in training? Have you trained smart? Have mm-hmm. you listened to your body? And I would be like, well, yes, or maybe no. Like, maybe I need to back it down. Because 1 year I trained way too much, mm-hmm. and I got overtired. Okay. And this was the fall before the 2015 World Champs mm-hmm. in Falun. And I literally went in October, late October, mm-hmm. 2 weeks of emergency rest.
Oh, wow.
Didn't train for 2 weeks in October, which normally would just throw me into an absolute tailspin.
Yeah.
But I was so tired.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, my God. And that's when I started to kind of realize when I'm overtired, one of the biggest signs is my mood.
Okay.
Like, if I don't want to go out and train, or if I'm like, God, I don't know about these intervals, mm-hmm. I probably shouldn't do them.
Yeah.
And just the way I'm wired, or if I get, like, irrationally sad, mm-hmm. and I'm not about to get my period. Yeah. but if I'm just irrationally sad for no reason, like, I'm tired.
Right.
Like, that I've learned is, like, one of my tells. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, I went on emergency rest for 2 weeks because it was an absolute Hail Mary, and it came back together.
Yeah.
Like, I still had a great season, but it took a really long time to work into that season. Like, it wasn't until World Champs when I was performing well. And I really learned a lot. So I think for me, I basically learned that how I'm wired. And actually, I think especially most female athletes I know mm-hmm. are probably not training too little.
Yeah.
Probably.
Right.
Because everyone I know is so intrinsically motivated. You know, it's internal. Like, if I said to you, all right, you can do 5 to 8 intervals, you're probably going to shoot for 8.
Right.
Yeah. And I know that because I'm the same way. And like, and so if you're feeling like, oh, like I'm feeling off or whatever, like chances are, because like sometimes, yeah, you could be like undertrained, but probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. And so I've learned that like usually it's more like I need to back it down and rest right. more. And so what did I do? This year in Park City, I actually pushed some workouts back and didn't do as many intervals because I came into camp feeling kind of flat and tired. And then I just did less and I was like, whoa, I actually finally feel great. And it's like when you are a little bit suppressed, you don't realize that mm-hmm. you're suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you rest enough and then you're like this little spring that's like boing. Yeah. You're like, what? Like,
oh, this is how it feels.
Like, this is how I should have been feeling all along, but I had no idea. And this is, it's funny because I'm 31. Like, I've done this so many times and I'm still learning, but at least now I feel like I'm more confident in taking the rest and more better able to like read my body signs mm-hmm. and be like, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Because I'm sad or whatever.
Right.
And so I feel like this year going into Ruka, I was like, it's gonna work out.
Yeah.
Like, just because I was like, there's no reason it wouldn't.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's sort of like, you can either look, it's sort of like the glass half full thing.
Right.
You can either be like, what if it doesn't work out? Or you could just be like, why wouldn't it?
Right.
Like, it definitely will, because mm-hmm. I've trained really hard. I've done everything I can. I know it'll come together. So what if it does go well? And
right.
I think I've just started to, and I'm not saying that, like, and we've talked about this, like, positive mm-hmm. thinking can't, mm-hmm. like, overcome reality.
Right.
Like, if you're injured, you can't just be like, oh, I feel great.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to do this anyway. Like, it doesn't work. But I think when it comes to, like, if nothing's wrong,
mm-hmm.
I choose to believe that things are going well.
Right.
Which is maybe very naive or like intrinsically optimistic, but
I mean, but I think that's what you, excuse me, you kind of need in this sport, because I find everything that you just said very relatable, particularly to my situation this past fall. You know, in September and October, I felt like I was flat the entire time. And I was, quite frankly, freaking out a little bit because I was approaching period one of the World Cup, and I knew that like it was going to be okay if it wasn't perfect, but I wanted to do well and perform well in period one, and I felt like I was not on track to do there or to do that or get there. And I just feel like I had to talk to our coach Perry, and I talked to our director Sperry. I asked Cork about questions. You know, I talked to anyone I could talk to, sports psych, support system, teammates. I mean, I was asking you guys, and I still just, like, I didn't have any confidence in it because I was like, well, I just still don't feel great. Like, I don't feel awful. If I felt awful, I'd be like, okay, I need to stop.
Then it's easier almost you feel awful.
Yeah, but it's just like, I don't feel great, and I kind of want to feel great in some of these workouts. You know, we do a time trial. I want to feel good in that time trial. Yeah, it's going to be hard, but it's going to be, you know, the type 2 fun that only I don't know, Nordies enjoy, but where you finish the race and you're hanging on your poles and you're like, that was sweet.
That was sweet, bro. We're so messed up.
Right? But I did time trials and I was like, that was not sweet. I just did not feel strong or fast and I don't really know what to do, but I basically just had to take a step back, and I spent some time with family out west, went to a family wedding, and spent time, you know, just with friends in the mountains, and gave myself a mental and physical break, mm-hmm. and then said, like, okay, I'm doing everything I can, and I'm going to make sure I get enough recovery and rest, and that I'm not overtraining, and whatever happens, happens, and it wasn't until, like, those first races in Ruka, especially the 20K for me, that it actually went pretty well. And yeah,
first time 30.
It was my first, yeah, my time of day was 30th, and it was the first time I've raced, I don't even know how many World Cups, but it's taken me a really long time to crack that top 30, and also to enjoy it, too. It's a different type of racing than when I'm racing domestically back home, and that race, I had so much fun. And I also felt really good. And I was like, wait, so everything is okay? Like, yeah. I'm okay.
You're
like,
telling me it's okay.
That preparation period that I had, like, that was okay. And, I mean, I feel like you spoke to this of trusting the process. Mm. Like, that's what you need to do. But what would you tell a younger athlete who maybe doesn't have the same experience to trust? What would you tell them to kind of overcome that barrier when they're leading into the season or when things don't feel like perfect?
Yeah. I mean, this is directly what I would tell younger Jesse. So I would say, number one, like, sometimes, quote, like, doing everything you can means, as you said, having the courage to take a step back.
Right.
And being like, I should not do these intervals. Mm-hmm. I didn't sleep well. I'm not feeling well. I feel like I'm on the edge of something or whatever. Like, sometimes I truly think it takes so much more guts to rest mm-hmm. and absorb training and have the trust that that's what you need to do, because it's easy to just plow through it.
Right.
And I've seen so many people do it, and I can say that it's really stupid because I've done it too. Yeah. So I feel no shame in being like, that's so dumb, because I know it's dumb and I've done it, where you just, it's a security blanket, is training more.
Right.
And being like, oh, but I trained this many hours. Who cares?
Yeah.
Nobody cares how many hours you train. The result sheet doesn't list your hours.
Right.
It lists your time.
Right.
And so I think it's just, I think, one, like, having the patience to truly listen to your body is huge. Mm-hmm. So, like, start to, like, journal.
Right.
Like, write in your training log, what are your tells? Mm-hmm. Like, in my training log, I have a bunch of things that I list that are subjective. Like, mm-hmm. how stressed am I? Mm-hmm. What's going on in life? Like, are we buying an apartment and moving? That's a stressful week.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't plan that week to be, like, big integral block. Like, that's not going to be smart. And then, because stress is stress.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all, you get one energy bucket.
Right.
Like, finals week, boyfriend drama, anything. That all comes out of the same energy bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And so recognizing that and then starting to learn your tells. So, like, I have, how stressed am I? What's going on in life? What's my mood?
Mm-hmm.
If my mood's starting to dip, okay, that's one of my tells. I'm tired. Mm-hmm. And so, like, start to, like, journal early on and, like, track that and, like, learn, like, what are my, like, what does it feel like when I'm starting to get tired?
Yeah.
And so then you can learn these patterns over time. And I'm not saying that there definitely might be seasons that you just kind of mess it up.
Right.
Like, and I've had those too. Everyone has. Like, I think everyone tends to forget. Even Marit Bjørgen.
Right.
Had a season that didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget because she's the actual goat.
Yeah.
But even the best in the whole freaking world
mm-hmm.
sometimes are like, okay, I, you know, we learned.
Yeah.
Like, we tried something, we got to try something else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's okay. And I think sometimes we get so scared of failure that we forget that it's such a learning opportunity too. And so I feel like I would tell my younger self, like, it is okay to rest.
Mm-hmm.
And start listening to your body early on and then having the courage to act on what your body tells you.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to listen to your body and be like, I think I'm tired. And then your teammate's like, so are we doing intervals? And you're like, yeah. And so, like, I feel like it's another thing to, like, actually have the courage to do what you need to do.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen people be truly amazing in figuring this out. And it took me longer than I would have liked to figure it out. So that's what I would basically tell myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken me longer than I would like to admit also.
Okay, truly, I don't know anyone who's figured it out super young. Right. Like, I actually have never seen it.
But I also feel like, to kind of add to that, is, like you mentioned, if you don't feel like you want to go out and do intervals, or you don't want to go training, and you know, despite whatever weather there might be, or you know, as soon as it feels like a chore, or like it's God, the worst thing to go do, maybe that's another sign. Because that's what I felt like this past fall was, you know, every single interval workout I was just kind of dreading, because I was like, I don't think I'm gonna feel good, this is a good test, but like I just don't want to deal with this, and I kind of just want to go back inside. And
yeah, that's a tell.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, I think, I mean, I was like, I need a break. I need to go have fun in the mountains and not stress about workouts and just train when I want to train, how much I want to train. If that means I'm going to go for an 8 or 9 hour run with my boyfriend in the mountains, cool. Or does that mean I'm going for like a 45-minute roller ski with a teammate or by myself? And I did that week what I wanted to do and what I felt like was right. And I feel like I actually went into our Park City training camp feeling so much better, both like physically and mentally, with more energy and more excitement. And I just feel like that it cannot be stressed enough to enjoy the process of what you're doing. And
because otherwise, I mean, this is a long-term sport.
Yes.
You know, like cross-country skiing, like you don't peak till your late 20s, early 30s. So like if I think there's a really fine balance to be walked between having intention, having a plan, having structure, and also it is your life.
Right.
And if you want to do this professionally, it'll be your life for probably at least a decade.
Yeah.
And so like I do think there's this importance of recognizing like when people are so intense and everything has to be perfect all the time. And again, I know this because I was this. Like, you can't be perfect all the time.
Right.
It's okay to give yourself some grace. And I think the one caveat, though, to your story that I would caution, at least the way I'm wired, is like with the like 8 or 9 hour run, that's something I would naturally want to do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And which is why I have my big stupid, why I only get like one a year, because I think it is... Like, I have had to learn, like, what are my natural tendencies?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what, for example, the tendency where if Cork writes, like, 6 to 8 intervals, I'm always going to try to do 8.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to learn that. And you're like, Cork, let's write 7.
Yeah.
and then we just evaluate while we're out there. And I've had to, like, or, like, God, it's so beautiful. I love these long runs. I love the adventures, like, long skis. And I will do too many of them if I don't have some structure around it. So I think every athlete has their thing that's like their weakness, whether it's like, I'll spend 8 hours in the gym, like, or, you know, whatever it is. Like, everyone has their thing that they have to, like, learn about themselves and then figure out, like, all right, how do I build in structure to save me from myself and my own tendencies?
Yeah.
So I think that is something else I would tell, like, younger Jesse.
Yeah, I mean, the same way that you might, or for me personally, I don't enjoy the gym. But I have to, I tell myself, okay, I need to go to the gym. It's going to make me a better skier. It's going to make me stronger. I need to go. The same way is, like, okay, I really enjoy those long adventures, but I can't do that many of them because it's going to make me overtired. It's not, it's going to make the following workouts less productive. And so in both kind of polar situations, you have to kind of catch yourself and be like, but this is going to make me better, or like if I pull back I'll be better than
cost benefit analysis.
Exactly. Yes.
And that's why I think it's cool that like you know this about yourself and you're like, all right, I can do a few of them,
right?
And so I'm gonna like meter them out, but I'm not gonna do it every weekend,
right?
And I think that's like really smart and something that I see a lot of younger athletes, like, not doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they're like, ah, oh, but it needs to be fun. I'm like, yeah, it can be fun and you can be professional.
Yeah.
And I think that's, like, where I feel like in Stratton we have a really this whole thing is a plug for fun. but I feel like we have a really good vibe of, like, it is fun and it's professional.
Absolutely.
And, like, we work so hard and we work so well. And, like, when we show up for intervals, it's dialed and...
We're cracking jokes.
And we're cracking jokes. And, like... In the gym, like, we are, like, deadlifting a shit ton of weight. Mm-hmm. And we're blasting, like, friggin' Shakira or whatever. Like, I just think it's a really cool vibe of, like, you can be super gritty, super tough, so professional, and still enjoy what you're doing.
Exactly.
And I think it's like a really good sweet spot.
Absolutely.
That we're in.
Well, so this is a question that I get asked a lot, being your teammate and
oh boy.
Having spent some time.
Does she sound like that because she smokes? The answer is yes.
I smoke a lot of cigarettes.
Perfect for the endurance athlete that we are. Well, okay, so what I get asked is, are you actually as bubbly and positive in person and when you're kind of just being you as kind of the perception on TV or social media? And my answer to everyone is yes. Like, you are just such a naturally positive person that it's quite, I mean, I admire it because I try to always think on the bright side or like flip things around, but I'm still sometimes like, man, I just need to sit in the corner right now and like be, you know, sad for a moment and then I'll get over it. But like, I feel like you really do just bring your authentic positive self to every single room that you're in. And it's always a pleasure to be with you. But, I guess, how do you maintain that? Or is it just natural for you? Do you
cocaine?
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
We're really just plugging the drugs and
I know.
The cigs.
What wouldn't it be like the world's best kept secret if I was just actually like a crazy person? No, well, first of all, thank you.
Yeah.
That's really, really sweet. And kids, don't do drugs. I've never tried drugs. That's why I can joke about it because I probably shouldn't. But I actually, that's a really interesting question because it's sort of like the nature nurture debate. Like, I do feel like, for whatever reason, I was just born on the very optimistic side of things, kind of like extroversion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm incredibly extroverted. Mm-hmm. I'm very type A. Those are things that are like, I can work on it. Like, I can work on not being in people's face when they're clearly needing space.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I, you know, those things. But, like, naturally, like, I talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just not something I'm ever going to change, really, about myself. And I feel like the optimism is similar. Like, I think I'm naturally just quite a happy person.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I want to recognize that I've had incredible privilege in my life, right? So, like, I had a great childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I have wonderful parents. An amazing little sister, super cute dogs. Like, I went to a great high school, had wonderful teachers, an amazing high school coach. Like I almost feel, like, kind of bad about how, like, the red carpet was sort of rolled out for me. And it's not anything I did.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anything that I deserved or didn't deserve.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the way things worked out. So I feel like, on the one hand, it's very easy to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I really suffered quite badly with my eating disorder, and that would have quite, and I wasn't happy
mm-hmm.
at that time. And that was honestly the reason my parents figured it out, because
mm-hmm.
they're like, what is, like, that's not Jessie. Like,
yeah.
She's so withdrawn and quiet, and, like, these are not things that are typical of her.
Right.
And so I do feel like I've had times in my life where I'm definitely not happy.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel like, generally speaking, like, even when things aren't going the best, I'm like, yeah, but, like, God, I am literally living my dream. Like, I get to ski race for a living and try to inspire people and, like, meet people from around the world, and I'm surrounded by an amazing team. Like, why wouldn't I be happy? And so I feel like my default setting just is there. But this is actually really interesting. So I was listening to a podcast with Dr. Michael Gervais.
Okay.
He's a sports psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
He has a really interesting podcast. And he was talking about optimism and how sometimes people think it's optimism is just like, it's all great. It's going to work out.
Yeah.
Like, even when it's like you're literally caught in a lightning storm.
Right.
In, like, at the top of a mountain, you're like, chances are you're going to die.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're just, it's not just like silly, blind, like, no, it's great, even when it's not. I think it's more of, like, an internal belief, like, things are going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something, and I'm obviously paraphrasing, but it was something like, all the most successful athletes in the world, they've all at some point, like, just believed this was going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody wins a race firmly believing internally, I can't win.
Right.
Nobody. Like,
right.
You do not win by accident.
Yeah.
You do not become the best in the world by accident. Like, you have to believe somewhere, even if it's, like, super deep within,
mm-hmm.
like, this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to train hard. I'm going to get myself into a great team. I'm going to have amazing coaches. Wax, this is going to work. And so I think it's the same way I believe that, like, every time Cork hands me my race keys, I'm like, these are going to be great.
Yep.
And, like, sometimes they are. Yeah. Sometimes we miss it.
Yeah.
And like, sometimes, yeah. But, like, I think there's just the belief that this will work out that helps me just have a positivity as my default.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah.
But I don't know if that's something that can be worked on or taught, or if you're just extroverted or not. Like, I don't really know the answer.
Yeah. It is interesting that you mentioned the nurture versus nature. And, I mean, I've met your parents, and they are also just, I would define them as, not to put a label on them, because I don't like labels, but they are Minnesota nice.
I mean, they're happy little hobbits.
They are so kind and so sweet and generous and thoughtful. And when you grow up with that, it's hard not to become that type of person too, which I feel like defines you quite well also. So it's, yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool to have that perspective of, like you mentioned, kind of growing up in maybe a privileged environment. I'll recognize, like, I had the same thing, the same situation, and that means, I mean, we still had obstacles to overcome, like, there are still challenges that everyone faces, but to kind of try to always think that things are going to work out. And I do feel like, personally for me, this past season I have had the best mental health that I have in many, many years. And
that's awesome.
I think it's because I've had such incredible balance in my life. You know, I have this side job where I'm working part-time, and I'm so grateful for it, and I'm so excited about the work that I'm doing, and I have fun doing it. And then I also am working really hard in my ski training and preparing for the season, and then and racing and chasing those goals, and then also things with my family and my boyfriend and my friends, like all of that. I just feel like there is balance, and not because I just naturally let that happen. Like, I worked hard for those things, and I make sure that I put effort into all of those things that I do. But to have that balance and then go into the season with the positive mental health, I think has had a huge impact on my racing so far. And so I just feel like it's incredible, like, what a positive mindset can do for you, especially on the World Cup where you're, you know, traveling, you're maybe in Scandinavia where it's dark, you're vitamin D deficient.
The vitamin D supplements are huge.
We say, as we continue to just sit out on this patio in Davos in full sunshine,
I'm definitely coming out of this podcast with a sunburn.
You know what, a pre-Christmas sunburn, it's not the worst thing that's ever happened. Okay, well, I do want to kind of wrap up, and I feel like most people listening to this podcast probably already know who you are, and they know your story. If not, then they can turn to your blog, your social media, your book, Brave Enough.
There's a whole book about it.
I do recommend, and it is quite, you know, your book is really incredible. It really shares your story of how you learned how to ski, how you got into the sport, how you overcame the challenge of your eating disorder, and then how you went after an Olympic gold medal, and it's
and how I missed one.
Yes, that's
most true. Importantly.
It has everything in it. But I do feel like I get to know you as a friend. You're
also my ski daughter.
This is true. For listeners, I lived with Jessie and her now husband Wade for a year in Stratton, and so
it was 2 years.
Oh, I guess I did. Yes, it.
But then there was the COVID year where we were all together all the time.
You're really there, yeah. So that's 2 years, yeah. Okay, so I guess as your ski daughter, speaking to my ski mom, I have a couple questions for you that are not related to skiing. And then we're going to do some rapid fire questions just so the audience can kind of get to know who Jessie is as a person, not just the skier athlete. So what is your perfect day in April look like?
Oh, thanks for saying in April.
Yes.
Because I'm like, surprise. It's different, but my perfect day definitely involves weight from start to finish. And I would say we're on vacation somewhere. Probably somewhere like Hawaii. Mm-hmm. That was really fun. And so we wake up, we have coffee, And then really early, like as the sun is rising, we go out and I snorkel with turtles. I love turtles. And so this is literally like what we did like the last April that we went there. Like get up, go for a really early morning snorkel with like these really cute little turtles and fish and stuff. And then we go have a really nice breakfast and probably some more nice coffee together. And then we go and we drive to a cool location for, like, a nice hike. And not, like, training. Mm-hmm. Just, like, a beautiful hike. Mm-hmm. Somewhere where it's inspiring. And we just love being outside together. Yeah. And just, like, the conversations that we have while we're, like, running or hiking are just... I feel like movement brings out, like, really interesting conversation mm-hmm. and thought in people. And so I just love doing that with him. And maybe we go swim under a waterfall and it's very romantic. And then we go for a really nice sunset dinner by the beach. Oh. Probably go swimming and maybe body surfing somewhere in there.
That all sounds amazing.
Oh yeah, that's why it's the perfect day.
Is that coming up this April? Are we planning that?
I don't know. So we had a mini moon mm-hmm. after we got married. We spent 5 days in Glacier National Park mm-hmm. in Montana and loved it. But we also want to have like a little longer like time, more of a right. traditional honeymoon, and it's all going to depend on how travel works out, but I would not be sad to yes. go back to Hawaii.
That sounds so fun. How does Wade provide balance to your everyday life?
Big ways and small ways. Mm-hmm. I think he and I, it's actually funny, we both took like these behavioral assessment tests.
Oh yeah.
And we are actually the yin and yang yeah. of each other, which is funny because I could have told you that without the test. Yeah. But he's very methodical. He really thinks things through, and I'm a little more rapid fire gut feeling. Okay. So I like to say like he makes things happen correctly and I make things happen fast.
Yeah.
And so like yeah, and so it's like even like down to like washing the dishes, like I'll get them done in a third of the time yeah. and I'll miss a few spots and he will not yeah. miss anything. And so it's kind of funny. So we are definitely, he balances me in all those ways. He's also like, once you get to know him, he's not super quiet or reserved, mm-hmm. but like in social situations, he's not as like, you know, I'll be like very loud and not even on purpose. It's just how I am. So we're balanced that way. And then he balances me out even to the fact that like he doesn't have social media.
Right.
Like he's never had an Instagram, doesn't understand TikTok or why it's a thing.
Neither do I, but.
To be fair, does anyone? But he doesn't, he deleted his Facebook.
Okay.
Like he's
so we can email him. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Or snail mail? Is that the best way to get
it? You can write him a postcard. So, yeah, but it's so nice because so much of my life is on social media, mm-hmm. and I do that on purpose. I want to share with people what's going on. I want to share the ups and downs. It helps me when I want to talk about climate change yeah. and eating disorders and mental health. I'm like, I need to be active on social media because right. that's how I reach more people.
Right.
But at the same time, is it that healthy? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so it's really nice that he's my balance
yeah.
and has none of it.
Yeah. Well, to the social media part, I feel like you do balance it so well with the authentic, like you share the ups and downs and also you use your platform for good. You know, you talk about Protect Our Winners or the Emily Program or Share Winter. And those are all really amazing organizations that do so much good in this world. And you're able to kind of share that and, I guess just inspire other people to get involved in those things or pay attention to those things. And you teach people a lot about like how does a friend talk to their teammate about, you know, something that they're going through, maybe with an eating disorder or other mental health problems. And the fact that you have built this platform and you're not using it for yourself, you're using it for the greater good of the people and the ski community and the outdoor community. And that's pretty cool. And not to say that, like, Wade doesn't do that, because he
is the sweetest person.
Right.
Yeah. He's a one-on-oner.
Yes, like, exactly.
He's not a broadcaster. He's a one-on-oner.
And I've had some good conversations with Wade one-on-one, and he's very smart and knows his shit.
He's a really good listener, too.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he's a great guy. You got a good one.
I know. I'm really lucky. That's also part of the reason people are like, why are you so happy all the time? I'm like, because I married the right guy.
Yeah, that's so fun. So where do you see yourself in 10 years.
Ooh.
Both, like, physically, mentally, whatever way you want to bring that.
Yeah, okay. All right, life plan. Yeah. I'm just going to say it like it's happening.
Okay.
I don't know if this is actually what's going to happen, but here we go. We're living out in Montana. We have this super cute house that Wade helped build. He built me a greenhouse with a lemon tree.
Perfect.
And I cook with lemons all the time, so it's perfect. And I grow kale and herbs year-round because I'm a hippie like that. And then and Wade has a job that is not as demanding as his current job,
mm-hmm.
and I am done ski racing, but I am working in the marketing industry for an outdoor company that I really care about, that shares my passions, so I really enjoy what I'm doing, and on the side, I get to do NBC broadcasting Ooh. With Chad Salma at the Ooh. Olympics, so I can cheer for you guys and see all the races as they're happening, because I think that would be really fun.
Yeah.
And then, and we have two kids. They're okay. twins, one boy and one girl.
Love it.
Because mm-hmm. I just want to be pregnant one time.
All right. Do we know their names yet?
Nope.
Okay, that's fine.
But even if I did, I probably couldn't share it. Yeah. Thing one and thing two.
Yeah, okay. We'll go with that for now.
Yeah. And that's basically it. And we get a lot of time together and we spend, and we start a absolutely banging cross-country ski program out there where it's focused on people having fun
Love
first.
It.
But yeah. if kids do want to get more serious about racing, we'll help them, like, we'll wax their skis and stuff. But, like, yeah, it's going to be focused on, like, fun and games.
Oh, I really like that. I already yeah. see it happening and I'm going to come visit. And
yeah, and we're going to have, like, some sweet guest lodging.
Yes, okay.
yeah.
Perfect. Okay, to move on to rapid fire questions. Are you yes, ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Game of Thrones or Outlander?
Outlander. Tough call, though.
Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings?
Harry Potter, the oh. books, Lord of the Rings, the movies.
Okay, I will allow that.
Mm-hmm.
Pizza or tacos?
If you make it, pizza. If I'm going out to somewhere else, tacos.
Speaking of which, are we having fish tacos tonight?
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay. favorite type of Christmas cookie?
Oh, the one that I just made the other day. Mm. It is chocolate. It's like a very fudgy chocolate with mint in it. And edible glitter on top.
Oh, yeah. Those were good.
yeah.
Favorite type of ice cream?
Dark chocolate sorbet with sea salt.
Ooh, not bad.
Not many places make it, but it is the best.
Do you have a favorite brand of ice cream?
This place that used to make it in-house in Park City, and they went out of business during COVID, and I am not over it.
Sad. I'm sorry.
I'm really sad.
Okay. If you could have three extra ingredients in a muffin, what would they be?
Oh.
So you've got your base, like your eggs, your flour, all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, you eat your base. Really good Mexican vanilla.
Oh.
Like the kind where you drive across the border and you get a huge okay. bottle of it, and it is not just super alcoholic, it's uh-huh. just super pure. And my grandma used to live in Texas and give us uh-huh. this, and it changes whatever you bake.
Wow.
And I'm really sad because we're on our last bottle. Oh. So. okay, so Mexican vanilla. Dark chocolate chunks.
Uh-huh.
And pumpkin seeds.
Ooh.
I like pumpkin seeds in muffins. Okay. It's not as, like, in your face as walnuts.
Mm-hmm. But it still adds that little crunch in there.
Little texture.
Nice.
It's
I like nice. That. Okay, I'm ready for some. What is the favorite, or your favorite cake that you've made over the years?
Oh, my God. This is a really hard question. There's no way this is rapid fire. Okay, excluding the ones that I've done that have, like, vegan or gluten-free.
Uh-huh.
Honestly, my favorite I've ever made is probably the one that gave us all, like, a hangover. But it was your birthday cake. It was an Oreo cake. It was three layers of, like, really dense dark chocolate cake with
so good.
33 Oreos crushed up into the icing. And we all got a sugar coma, but it was so fun to make. And it was like a chocolate ganache, like, drizzled around
the outside. Oh, my God. It was so good. I had two slices, and I had a sugar hangover the next morning. It was tough, but it was so good.
Like, I mean, we were all just, like, buzzing from it, but it was so amazing. And, like, I had so much fun decorating it. And I think that was the first time I ever, like, went all out on a cake and was like, this has got to look crazy.
I'm honored. It was delicious. It was amazing. Okay, celebrity male crush.
Celebrity male crush. Probably Patrick Dempsey, because he also supports the ski team.
Yes.
So that's pretty rad.
Thank you, McDreamy.
Thank you, McDreamy, for making my McDream come true. Wow, I'm so cheesy. Good thing he'll never listen to this, so it's fine.
Hey, you know, we're not cutting it out.
No, like, not because it's your podcast, but because he's just very busy.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay, so favorite celebrity female crush.
Oh, this is obvious. Nina Dobrev.
Yeah, I knew that one was coming.
I got to meet her, and she's probably already forgotten about it, but I will never forget.
Favorite stop on the World Cup circuit?
I love Toblach.
Mm.
I love racing there. I love that we stay in a super awesome family-owned hotel right across. We walk to the race venue. Mm-hmm. The pasta, the sunshine, the people, the food, everything. It's perfect.
Grazie mille.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to during the Tour de Ski?
Ooh. It's kind of a random thing, but I think obviously I'm looking forward to the races and the challenge of it and the ups and downs. But when we get to Predazzo, we always stay in the same hotel. Again, family run.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so kind. Mm-hmm. And that town, it's like this super adorable, like very old
mm-hmm.
town with like winding cobblestone streets. And I know every shortcut. I know like every street in the whole town because we stayed there for World Champs in mm-hmm. 2013. And some years when I would get sick in the tour, I would just go for a walk and just wander around and get lost. Yeah. And I feel so at home there.
Yeah.
And it just, every year we get there and I just, like, my heart feels like it's going to burst out of, like, just, it's like one of my places, you know? So that's, like, just a cool feeling that I look forward to every year. Mm. And it has nothing to do with the races. Like, I could be racing well, I could be racing terribly, and I still feel that feeling when I get there, which is cool.
That's so fun. I love Italy.
I know. I have such a thing for Italy. Like, I love everywhere we go. And I, you know, there are very few places where I actively have not liked it.
Right.
But I just, there's some places where I just feel so at home and at ease. And I was just like, why do we have to leave?
Right.
Yeah.
We're in a happy place.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Jesse, we have our suntan now, maybe a sunburn.
Definitely.
But this has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
I really enjoyed it. I also really like this professional microphone setup.
Oh, yes.
I feel so legit.
We do what we can here at Extra Blue.
Yes, we do what we can.
Okay, thank you so much. And let's go make some cookies or something.
Yeah, I feel like that would be an appropriate afternoon activity.
Perfect.
Too bad we don't have Mexican vanilla.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Extra Blue. It was so fun to record with Jesse in person. If you enjoyed this episode, please give it a rating and review. Be sure to share with your friends and family. You can listen to it over the holidays while you're cooking or traveling or whatever you might be doing. Also, you can always submit questions or requests for my podcast by visiting my website, asonison.com. I am planning a little holiday break, so please don't expect another podcast to drop until after the new year. Until then, happy holidays and enjoy the extra blue days.